This is Improvised Radio Theatre with Dice, with me, Michael Kuehl.
And me, Roger Burlwest. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, you all. Here we have the bustling cold of a new bright year, starting unspoiled, virgin and capable... No, let me stop doing that. And let's just go on to what we're actually talking about. More concrete matters. What are we talking about?
Anyway, we're recording this on the solstice, even before the giant cockroach infestations have been discovered yet. So,
would you please not do prophecy on this podcast, Roger?
So let us instead do current affairs.
Current affairs. We're going to talk about current affairs, affairs with currents. And we're also going to talk about advice to players, because... we GMs are perfect and do not need any advice.
And we've talked about that before.
Yeah. The nice people at the Bundle of Holding send us advance notice of their wares and samples, bless them, which are crowding up our hard drives.
No gamer has lots of games they haven't run. I mean, that would be ridiculous.
Yes, but you and me, Roger, because of this, have ludicrous numbers of games we have but haven't run. So, and we feel, and when we find something interesting or good, we like to point it out to you. They're repeating an offer from some time ago of traveller material, which they bundle as the Explorations bundle. I think mostly focused around the reduced Explorers version of the core rules.
Yeah, but you do get the latest iteration of the core rules as well.
Which is a good thing, because they've been...
I confess I'm puzzled about the Explorers edition.
Go on.
I mean, I can see that there is a demand for a quick start rule set. But what a quick start rule set is, in the modern parlance, is typically a bunch of pre-gen characters and an adventure. With lots of hand holding for the GM, saying this is how you do whatever in this system to show off the system.
I think basically
very much like the sort of thing I used to run as GURPS demos at conventions.
Yeah, I think there are two stages. There's the quick start, and there's the starter set, which is slightly more involved. But
this doesn't feel like that either. I mean, it is very cut down. It's got character generation with all the potential complexity that has, but only two careers, the scout and the scholar.
Which is ridiculously cut down.
Yeah, it doesn't even have an adventure baked in with it. Though there are adventures in this offer, specifically the Death Station, which is an update of the classic Traveller Adventure Death Station, which is an interesting whodunit. Oddly for the era, it does not simply say this is the culprit. It says here are several options for the culprits, and here is how you point towards one of them. But anyway, also a couple of source books, Spinwood Marches and Sword Worlds,
which are fairly core to the mythos of the setting and where they put a lot of stuff before.
And this does combine with the, I don't remember what they call it, but they're basically, if you pay the escalating price offer, which gets you two of the Aliens of Charted Space books, which I haven't had much to do with, because honestly, my Traveller has mostly tended to be fairly human-focused, but it's definitely there. There's a Sword Worlds campaign, Skandersvik, which is basically you are Sword Worlders going out on a merchanting expedition. And a couple of extra subsectors which are relevant to the campaign, you get their source books as well, so you don't rely just on what's in the adventure. So that looks kind of fun. Also, for no obvious reason, there is the completely unrelated adventure from several hundred parsecs away, The Lost Duke.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing.
But anyway, the main thing, as a regular follower of this stuff, the only thing that is actually a new file is the very latest of the 2022 edition rules.
I think it occurs to me that the Explorers edition is a name that came off Savage Worlds,
yes.
I think. And I think they are... this is an attempt to impersonate?
Borrow the glory of?
Mimic the... The Explorers Edition, and I think the Savage Worlds Explorers Edition worked a bit better than this does. But you're going to get the core rules anyway. So why are we criticizing?
Well, that's the odd thing. I mean, I have no objection in principle to the idea of a starter set of, you know, here is an example of the neat stuff in this game. Now go by the core rules. That's fair enough. I find it a kind of, and this is, even the regular price of the Explorers Edition is $1.
Yeah.
So it's clearly designed to do that. I just find it kind of weird that they haven't really done a lot. I mean, you've got, yeah, there's a little bit of character generation, a little bit of spaceship combat, a little bit of this, and yeah. Seriously, if somebody out there has used this, has got some use out of it, please let us know, because I am genuinely curious as to who is the target market for this.
It's not even a proper player's book.
Yeah.
A proper player's book would have all the options and a couple of new ones for character generation, but and a decent equipment list. But what can I say? Publishers, the ways of publishers are mysterious.
Yeah, well, I haven't even run a gaming publisher, never mind gone bust, as the vast majority of gaming publishers have. So
you have that to look forward to, Roger.
But there is also another offer, and this is stuff that hasn't been bundled before, which is the Traveller Ancients offer.
Yeah, part of this is reworking material from the very old days of the first edition, where you discover what is going on with the ancients. There must be people out there who don't know, so no spoilers. But the ancients are the people who emerged first to discover the jump drive, spread their civilization all over the local area, interfered with the destiny of numerous races, including especially the human race and dogs, whom they liked for some reason.
Woof.
And they, I mean, they liked us too. It's more mysterious that they like us than they like the dog.
Let's face it, they are, in at least some respects, the wizard did it of the Traveller setting. Anything that you can't come up with a rational explanation for, oh, well, the ancients must have done it.
And then they had a very messy final war and left behind a lot of mysterious artifacts. And there is some argument about who they were, what they were doing, and why they did it.
Nobody knows who they
Nobody
were
knows.
Or what they were. Sorry. No Spinal Tap quotes.
That's a quotation, isn't it? What I was going to say was there was a very small couple of adventures, Twilight's Peak and The Secret of the Ancients, which were published in the ancient times while dinosaurs still roamed the earth.
I think there was another one that led into Secret of the Ancients, but I cannot now remember what it was. It wasn't any sort of connected campaign or anything like that, because these were not the days when those happened.
It didn't make much sense. But now they have published one big central campaign called Secrets of the Ancients. And
which is basically Gareth Rider Hanrahan's update of the original Secrets, plus, I believe, material from those other two adventures as well.
Then they went and added a prequel to it called Mysteries of the Ancients, and then a sequel to it called Wrath of the Ancients.
Both of them by Martin Doughty, whom I don't know what this particular stuff is like to run, but I have very much liked some of his short adventures for the Mongoose Traveller line.
Well, he has... I'm not quite sure. A sequence of short adventures in Mysteries of the Ancients, which gets the player characters, who are presumed to be sane otherwise, involved in the doings of the people who go around hunting for ancient relics and trying to discover the secret of the ancients. Could we put an echo effect on that? That would be nice. And then somehow that is supposed to... It looks a little tacked on to me, but it includes material from Twilight's Peak.
Right.
And then after the grand climax of Secrets of the Ancients, which I will not reveal here, There is also Wrath of the Ancients, What the Ancients Did Next, Why and Why They Were Pissed Off with Everybody. Now, look, I have reported here before, I attempted to run Secrets of the Ancients, and I just couldn't do it. There was just too much stuff, and it wasn't... part of it may be that it's published in a single bloody big book. I think my feeling is that this would have gone better. It would have gone better as a box set with lots of printout, lots of handouts, and lots of aids to navigating the places that you find yourselves in, and lots of pictures to so. The poor GMs, poor suffering GMs, descriptive faculties don't get overloaded. But be that as it may, I didn't dislike it. I just found it too difficult for me.
A question: Did you get this as hard copy or PDF?
Hard copy and PDF.
Right, because it's a thing I have done for the 2300 campaign in which you are playing. Mentioned occasionally. Yeah. As presented, there are basically four volumes of it, and I believe the hard copy box set comes as four volumes similarly. And one of them is the outline of the mission and the crew. One of them is the technical notes. One of them is the big adventures that are the key to the campaign, and the other one is the small adventures.
Yeah.
And what I have done is turn each of those into individual mini PDFs and print them out and put them in the order they're supposed to happen. And that has certainly helped me a great deal.
Well, I think the problem is that once you get into the realm of the ancients, you've got a lot of weird and only semi-describable stuff. No spoiler, they end up on an ancient starship. At one point, floating in the atmosphere of a gas giant, and have to try to survive it. And I found it very difficult to mentally navigate the place and to show the players what it looked like, what it felt like. And I felt it needed more stuff to do that. And when I looked at what was coming up later, no spoilers there, there was stuff coming up later, my poor psyche collapsed, went and cowered in a corner. So, on the whole, this is as big an undertaking, I would say, of the three volumes, as not as big as the as let us say the Great Pendragon campaign, but at least as big as one of the old Call of Cthulhu mega campaigns. As I say, the boxes, and that was. And anybody who wishes to try it has my praise for their courage, at least. And it's available as a PDF, as a series of PDFs. And if you feel your blood stirring at the prospect of exploring strange ancient alien species and finding out what they're up to, and risking your lives and sanity in the process, then this is very possibly the Traveller campaign for you.
Also available in the bundle for another 4 days. This expires on the 5th of January, 2026.
And it might make a good New Year's present to yourself. So go ahead, have a look. Every other podcast in the universe at this moment in time, it seems to me, and every YouTube channel is saying, we live in portentous times. Or something equivalent to that, and remark upon how strange it is. Some of them are saying, oh, we're doomed, and some of them are saying, I'm trying to quote Wordsworth, and I'm failing, but and to be young was very heaven. But never mind, and some of them are depressed, some of them are happy. We have avoided political content here. But it's inevitably going to dribble in the next section.
Everything is political, whether one wants it to be or not. Because if you say, I'm not going to do politics, you are effectively supporting the status quo. I'm aware of this. What I'm not trying to do, I'm not trying to bring my politics into this, because there are lots of other places for that. And I get annoyed when other people start talking politics in the context in which that wasn't the thing, so I'm not going to do it to you guys.
Well, the thing is, I have to, if I'm going to use material from current political themes, I'm going to have to bring my politics into it, which means I'm going to have to take very careful care to bring my players' politics into my mind and decide what I can say and what I can't say. There are things I definitely can't say. This is a very censorious age. But let us take the example of my new GURPS campaign. It's set in a fantasy city of my own design, and it's set 1,000 years or more after the previous campaigns. The city is supposed to expand. It lives on a dead version of the planet Earth, which has been destroyed by creeping interdimensional nastiness, which consumes everything. And the gods of the city are bringing people in and expanding it gradually as more and more people come in, doubling the length of the circular border every time that happens. And it's been 1,000 years since the last one. And the reason for this, it will come out, is the city government has decided to stamp on all possible immigration. They've decided their arrangements are perfectly nice, and they don't have to have more than a minimal number of people trickling in. And that's going to be one of the big themes of the campaign. It may not emerge early, though I'm echoing it from the start. And I'm fairly certain that my players won't object to this theme, but it is a political theme. It is a current political theme in which I appear to be disagreeing with the vast majority of people in this country. And there is a wave of that everything's full up. We can't have any more people going through the cultures of the West, which is absolutely bloody ridiculous.
It is completely synthetic as well. I mean, it is very easy to get people out of this. You ask them, who is going to wipe your bum when you are old and crumbly?
Well, actually, I was going to rely on my relatives, but... no, I can't impose that on my bum on them. That would be wrong. Probably I'm going to require some not very well paid person, which is the nasty side of my tolerance of immigration. No, my enthusiasm for it. Be this as it may, is this ever a good idea, and what are the limits? I mean, not just specifically immigration as a theme and being afraid of other cultures as a theme, but is it a good idea ever to do this? I remember when George W. Bush was being an asshole about 9/11, I introduced him as the Antichrist into one of my world-jumping campaigns, which was petty of me and mean, but it was how I felt at the time. And had I but known where the Republican Party was going to go, oh, there goes my chances of ever getting a visa to America this side of the
world. Well, he did technically have the Crowley connection.
Did he?
Yeah, I think we've talked about this before.
And I've forgotten it again.
Was it Barbara Bush, or was it her mother? Was in Paris in the relevant time in the early 20th century. But she does not actually appear on Crowley's list of people what I have slept with, which frankly I would expect her to, because he was, that list is larger than it should be, not smaller. but it would theoretically have been possible for Crowley to have been an ancestor of both Bushes.
Whilst it is, whilst it is a wise son who knows his own father, let us leave off ancestral slander.
I mean, the only reason I mention it is because if you're going to have a Bush as the Antichrist, that you have to bring in that real world connection, or at least I feel you do.
It was only happening in the background. My players were fleeing from one universe to another, and were just or had barely had time to look at the newspaper before they got themselves the hell out and home, I seem to recall. But it was merely a moment, and I don't think it did anything to the campaign other than provide a cheap laugh and a suitable villain.
Well, that is one of my considerations, that it can very... Given the level of sophistication of many games, it can very easily come over as parody rather than a serious thing.
Yeah, which is why what I'm doing now has no names, no pack drill. The people who run the city will be very nice, very responsible. I'm not saying I'm not going to hint at something really unpleasant hiding in the background, and possibly... The city must be defended from doom at one point, and preferably by the player characters. So I'm going to work in really nasty motivations, hidden very deeply. But is this a good idea? Is it a good idea ever to blatantly bring a current political issue into your games?
Well, I think the more blatant it is, the more it comes over as author's message, or in this case, GM's message. And I tend to have a poor reaction to that, because even, perhaps especially, when it is a message with which I agree, because it always comes over as simplistic. It has to be. It's a work of fiction. The real world is more complicated, and you don't... On the one hand, there are things that it is clearly a good idea to do, which are clearly not being done. On the other hand, the answer is not, well, let's elect the right people to do the right thing. It's more complicated than that.
The answer is certainly not, let's recruit a bunch of ragtag individuals and let them solve the problem.
I've mentioned...
Except that does often, quite often happen in history, so I think I should...
I have occasionally mentioned, I think, I'm being unfair to it, but that there is definitely that moment in 60s and 70s comics where they decided that we ought to be a bit socially responsible. And the answer is, well, what if urban poverty could be punched in the face?
Now, hang on. I have to defend that period of time by mentioning the Green Lantern, Green Arrow sequence, which was all about that sort of thing, about Oliver Queen, the Green Arrow, who was at that stage a former billionaire who had been ruined, and Green Lantern, who Hal Jordan, who is a former test pilot, an intergalactic cop, and one of the paragons of responsibility, courage, and virtue that comic books like so much, and they go about the America and discover things that they don't like and things they can't do anything about except on a very small scale.
Mm.
And you can defeat the weaponeers from the antimatter universe of Quag, but you can't stop racism and poverty and what have you.
And if you're getting really subtle about it, you get somebody who can, but he's an evil genius, and the way he's going to do this is to mind control everybody he doesn't like. And then you can have some serious debate about what is the right thing to do here.
Yeah, well, the President Lex Luthor was the high point, I think, of that. Though maybe I'm being unfair to Thanos, the movie version there. The problem. Well, I've been and gone and done it now. I've started introducing. I'm only on the third session. My goodness, I do plan ahead. But the themes and the hints of what is really going on are all already lying on the ground. The player characters are 3 out of 5 immigrants themselves. They are first-year students at the Institute for Magic and are getting a free ride because the Institute knows what it's there for. And they are turning into the next generation of magicians, and some of them will be the next generation of immigrants to the city, because that's about the only legitimate means of coming through. Unless you can turn up at the gate, have a claim for asylum and convince some member of the city, some citizen of the city, to take responsibility for you, which is a deliberately unlikely to happen event, sequence of events. And naturally, there's one of those already. So I think I'm being subtle. I'm not sure. I'm just... Is it if the player, my players feel like saying, yeah, well, but in the real world, it's more complicated than that. How do I react?
Well, my answer to this is, as I say, try to stay away from specific details, and it sounds as if you're doing that. And that there are specific reasons for this working the way it does in this particular place, and those specific reasons aren't going to be the same as the ones somewhere else.
No. No. Cosmologically, in this setting, immigration is a good idea. It's a thing that should happen. It's a thing that's always unpopular as it's happening, but it's known to be a thing that happens. So, and it's a divinely appointed thing that happens, and quite possibly if it doesn't happen, this particular mini-cosmos collapses in on itself. So that's something they're only going to realise at a later date.
I will confess that I don't tend to do this much, partly because I find current affairs essentially dispiriting. I'm not going to say depressing, because that's a specific clinical term, but I cannot work up... For example, I have stopped building science fiction settings projected from the present day because I just can't do it anymore.
Ah.
Not that are interesting to play in.
Yeah, getting over the next hump is going to be a bugger.
When I run what I call contemporary games, they tend to be 10 plus years in the past, because I don't want to have to fart around with, oh, they used AI, or, oh, you just get...
Yeah, if I ever rerun Dracula Dossier, which I'm tempted to many, many times, I'm going to set it in its original setting back in the... immediately post the collapse of the Soviet Union. I think that's the best place for stories about vampires coming out from behind the woodwork and getting involved in events. I did end up my last campaign with the vampirizing of, or at least very least the Renfielding of Boris Johnson, which I think was only fair.
Hey. What I did do, and the closest to this I've done lately, it was my Florida campaign of a few years ago, and the way it's pronounced, it matters, because this was the Florida exclamation mark campaign.
Flora. Why don't they pronounce it Florida or something equally ridiculous? All the other words they put out. Never mind. My prejudice is showing.
So this was consciously modelled on the weird Florida of Carl Hiaasen and similar authors. And most of the incidents in it were copied directly from Florida Man stories.
Hmm.
For which I don't need to care about whether they're accurate or not. I just take the story and say, well, okay, if this were accurate in this weird world of monster hunters, how could it have happened? For example, a genuine story of someone claiming that he had to break somebody's front window because he saw a dinosaur and had to get away from it.
Yeah.
It turned out he had a very good smoke shortly before this incident, and may have been a little unreliable as a witness. But okay, so yeah, we have to turn this into adventure. Well, obviously there are dinosaurs roaming the suburban streets. Why? There comes the adventure.
Quite so. I can see two or three different alternatives. But yes. But that is based on modern American culture, which is a slightly separate entity, though not entirely.
It's already a parody.
I was going to say it's slightly separate from modern American politics, but not entirely.
But the Florida Man concept is a parody of the real thing, the way stories are told about him. It's already takes into account. This was based on the vision of Jacksonville given in The Good Place. So, but
I have not watched The Good Place.
The canonical quote for me was, Once this guy in a bow tie came up to me at the gun range in a Jacksonville bus station and said he'd give me $600 if I put these weird turtles in my duffel bag and brought them to Daytona Beach. So I hotwired a swamp boat to Daytona and the guy paid me the $600. The point is, you always trust dudes in bow ties. That is my Jacksonville. I've never been there. I'm not sure it would have helped for this particular game.
Oh, dear. It occurs to me that guys in bow ties come in two sorts in my imagination. The very, very rotund ones and the ones with incredibly long, thin necks. And I don't see normally physically composed people having bow ties. I, unfortunately, am one of the incredibly rotund ones.
I have worn bow ties. I don't do it often, but...
Roger, with your beard, how could we tell?
When it starts to spin.
I look forward to Christmas. Maybe I will see your beard spinning. All right. Have I crossed a boundary here? Is there any way I could write... You see, I find that the published role-playing games which have political themes or even utopian progressive themes to be rather clumsy and rather depressing, to be honest. They are about one thing and can only be about one thing, and this worries me a little bit. But I want to avoid preaching, but I also don't want to avoid the issue.
What was that game that was on the bundle of holding a few months back? The Mongoose one of you are female warriors in a dystopian Norse-flavoured society?
I can't remember. I think I may have suppressed the memory of reading that one. But it was there.
That looks to be quite fun to play, but probably not for very long.
Yeah. I always find myself disadvantaged when I face female utopias or dystopias, for that matter. And I don't know what I am supposed to do about it. I don't know that I can project myself into the person of the female protagonist in that sort of setting. And this is probably a lack in me, but...
I play female characters quite a lot. It just depends on my mood at the time, but no. A Shield Maidens, yeah. that was the game.
Shield Maidens. Well, yeah. There was an explanation, I seem to recall, why they had to be maidens, or at least female, to
Yeah, the obey and comply mind virus only works on men because the people who designed it reckoned it would be easier to build that way and only men were important anyway.
That's a reasonable assumption, I think. Okay, well, yeah. All right, obey and yeah.
I've seen a number of Christmas decorations inspired by They Live this year.
Oh, tempera, amoris. Or something like that. All right. I think I'm going to leave that there, as we're not sparking off each other.
Well, I think what I would say is that the answer to your original question is it will depend on you and the players and the relationship between you, and this would be something for which I at least would think very carefully about the specific players for whom I was intending to run it. That in turn means this is not something I would try to write for publication.
The initial impulse of it is... Something else entirely. It's the exploring the idea of magic and the idea of becoming a magician, becoming a sorcerer, becoming a wizard. And I really ought to work up some names for the various classes of magic users. Hang on a sec. Let me make a note.
Blasty, lifty, mind controlly.
One of the things about the March North and its sequels is that occasionally it brings up entirely bizarre names for things, including classes of wizards, and then just forgets to explain them, which is, you know, I sort of praise him for doing that sort of in-depth background. On the other hand, I feel like kicking him at the same time. Still, I don't have to bring all the classes of magic users into the game that I have names for. I can just hint at them like the giant rat of Sumatra.
Well, but, as I've suggested elsewhere, but you weren't a senior exits in Next Melts Ever and Anon, one could have a lot of fun defining a personal path towards magic, specifically in GURPS. But on the other hand, I am a GURPS enthusiast, and I'm probably underestimating the amount of work that would be required to make this interesting.
True. But one of the nice things about GURPS is that it has a lot of material already worked out by people who did have enough time and enthusiasm. I was going to say, my initial impulse, before I diverted myself, and that may out, entire diversion may have to go. Before I diverted myself, the thing I was saying was that the initial impulse of the game was exploring becoming a magician. And the immigration thing only came up when I thought deeply about the amount of space I would have to fill in on the maps in the ninth expansion of the city. And it occurred to me how much easier it would be if for some mysterious reason it hadn't got filled up again, like as it was filling up the last time I ran this setting. So on the whole, this may not be me deciding bravely to face political themes. It may be me using political themes in order to do any to avoid hard work.
Seems like a good plan to me. I mean, one could also say that the process of becoming a magician is, from a social perspective, maybe analogous to the process of becoming extremely rich. There are things you can do that nobody can stop you from doing. And how does society cope with that?
And also, as the March North and its sequels point out, that sort of power isolates you. And just because you're insanely powerful doesn't mean you don't need people. But people will find you to be a monster and will turn away from you. So that's going to be worked in, because that's one of the themes as well. I think
they will come towards you, but they will be sycophants and they will tell you that all your ideas are brilliant ones.
Yeah, that could be a problem. I have no temptation to make their characters think that they're wonderful. Graham has already earned his character a demerit before the end of the second day, and by talking whilst the principal was giving his welcoming speech, which is just not on, really, not on. Damn it all. On to the next thing. Just to prove that we do actually listen to our listeners when they correspond with us, they recently, there emerged in a thread on Tekelili a request that we do a series of rules, guidelines, suggestions, our best practices for GMs. But looking into our extensive records and searching through our incredibly well-indexed files, we discovered we'd already done that. So here we're going to talk about similar bits for players, which I don't think we've done before, but we may have because we are elderly gentlemen and we tend to forget. In passing of which, I recently backed, and I'm here to tell you it might be a good idea if you backed, the second edition reissue of Tomb, the role-playing game of classic cartoons and playing Bugs Bunny or Bugs Buddy Exby, in fast, funny, and quite ridiculous circumstances. And one of the things that turned up in my inbox was...
This ends on the 15th of January, by the way. So you still have time to back it.
I should have checked, but I didn't. Never mind. It was something called the Toon Commandments, which go like this. 1, you are here to be funny. 2, act before you think. 3, checking the rules is slow and boring and tedious and should be avoided, so don't go doing that all the time, okay? 4, commit to the bit. 5, repeal the laws of physics. 6, rules are for breaking. 7, words are toys, have fun. 8, when in doubt, recap. 9, keep an eye on the birdie. 10, everyone wins. And apart from the bits about repealing the laws of physics, I'm sort of tempted to use those as really good advice for almost any form of play or of role playing. Funny isn't forever, except in two, but funny is almost for every session. Act before you think, which I think means stop thinking, act. Yeah. Commit to the bit. Yeah, all of those, I think, are really good advice for anybody who is going to go and be a role player, not just for Tomb.
I'm just thinking of the original suggestion for Paranoia, which I can't lay hands on right now, which is something along the lines of be amusing and the fates will smile on you, be boring and you're dead.
Yep. I have never been quite that merciless, but... reasonably merciless has been part. That's a rule for the GM, though.
No. This is explicitly for the players.
Oh, right, that's true. Yeah, but the execution, and no pun intended, is by the GM and for the GM, and for the GM's pleasure at all times.
Though I wouldn't agree with these in the general case, because I mean, it's fine for a comedy game, but not every game needs to be fast-moving comedy.
All right.
By negotiation with the players, perhaps. But I've enjoyed fast-moving comedy-type games. I've enjoyed slower-moving, but occasionally... what I think of as diegetic humour, you know, the sort of gruesome joke that your bloke in the trench might tell to get past the horrors of war...
Yeah.
..is a thing that, in my experience, will arise spontaneously in a grim and gritty game, and I have absolutely no problem with that. I'm very much in favour of it. That said, you know, sometimes it's fine to take a while and make a plan. This is one of the clichés of role-playing. Oh, they'd had a long, boring planning session. They were enjoying it.
True.
If they were enjoying it, then there is not a problem doing it. I cannot think of a game other than a strictly mechanical player versus player game like the original Man to Man, which was just the combat system from first edition GURPS, where checking the rules is a good thing.
I think your rules mastery, though, is always optional for players. It's not compulsory. I think it's...
This is one of those gaming silo things. There are definitely groups of gamers in which that is considered absolutely vital. Gary Gygax used to write a lot about how important this was. For him, one of the key characteristics of a good player was that they were absolutely on top of the rules. They knew all the options their character had available and when to use them and so on.
I regard that sort of player as a blessing, if only because it reduces the amount of strain on my... limited and aging mental process.
I regard it as a flaw in the system if they have that many options that they have to remember.
I run GURPS.
I like GURPS. I don't build characters who have 17 different things they can do in any given situation. You know, even when they're blasty fantasy wizards, they have some things that they're specifically good at. And because the way the GURPS magic works, a whole bunch of spells that they're never going to use.
That's true. My current GURPS game is going to be tiptoeing through the limitations and basis of the magical skills for the next 3 years in-game. So that may be a mistake of mine, but...
But I've run demo games, and specifically for a demo game, this is for people who've never played GURPS before. And yeah. And some of those demo games have had potentially quite complex characters, you know, psionics, magicians, and so on. But what they always have is a fairly small number of options. These are the effective things you can do.
Hmm.
Also, your character sheet says you can do that stuff. But you know, here are the key things that are likely to be relevant in this adventure. And that, you know, that's a working minimum, yeah, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not going to demand, even an experienced player, I'm not going to require that they do that. As you say, it's sometimes useful. But it's a specific sort of play, and it's not the only valid sort of play.
All right. Well,
I would honestly rather a player who get completely into character and ask me every time which dice they roll to hit somebody than a player who's all on top of the mechanics, but all they talk is mechanics.
The relief comes when the player knows his character, knows what the character can do, and can handle the rules burden instead of the player, instead of the GM having to handle the rules burden. You do have to trust them to, A, get it right. There is one player I have who is an enthusiast, but, oh, he manages to get things wrong. And so we tiptoe carefully around his special powers until we've established, yeah, that's actually what it can do, and he's getting it right.
I know one player who has a strange mental quirk. I don't think it is a full quirk in GURPS terms. He has detailed recollections of what happened in the previous session, which are likely to be at least 50% likely to be wrong.
Yes, I know that well. It is part of the root of my sadistic practice of getting the players to explain to anybody who was away last time what it is that happened. Because, well, it's also a check against me discovering that they have got something entirely wrong and have been operating on false assumptions for the past several hours of role playing. so yes, it's not just sadistic pleasure, it's also a check against. Anyway, we are drifting away from the subject.
Well, one useful player skill is the ability to recall this stuff accurately. Many yes, groups have someone who is better at this than the rest of them. There is a trick. The now defunct actual play podcast, The Stars Are Right, did this. Basically, quite soon after the session is over, they would get one player to sit down and do a couple of minutes of recap of what happened in this session while it was still fairly fresh in their mind.
Yeah,
I've never actually managed to achieve this myself, but I would like to give it a try sometime.
It were, if you were doing something that was intended for sharing with the rest of the cosmos, I think that's a really good idea. On the other hand, by the time a session is over, I'm knackered, they're knackered, and mostly we just want to go home. The player who takes notes is blessed. Blessed are the note takers. I've got it. All right. Let me good practices for role players. Be there. Turn up, and if you're not going to be there, let people know as early as you can. When you're there, listen. I think listening is more important than talking. And I don't just mean listen to the GM. I mean listen to the other players. I've never met a group of players who are disciplined enough to not interrupt each other or talk over each other, but better awareness of what other people are saying and doing is a blessing when you get it, and it's rare enough.
One of the things that I value in a player is what I think of as engagement, which to a large extent is listening. But you know, they're not only listening to or reading the briefing, they're thinking about it and they're saying, well, hang on, if this and that, then maybe that happens. And then they will try to do that other thing and see if it does work and so on. And I try to run worlds that are fairly specific in terms of what the miracles. Even in a science fiction game, I will try to have a distinctive hyperspace system or something like that, even if it is otherwise fairly conventional large interstellar policy stuff. In a fantasy game, which is one of the reasons I don't run genre fantasy, because it is very hard to find the distinctive in it. It's there, but a fantasy I'm likely to run is much more likely to be one of the distinctive ones.
A world where you have a sense of what is real and what is not, and what can be done and what things imply.
If you're having a distinctive world, then you should then there should be stories that only really work, or at least work best, in that world. Those are the stories I'm interested in. And it absolutely helps if the players also feel this way, or at least to the extent of what are the things that are distinctive about this world that I can do.
I think there are two things that show me that a player is paying attention. One is if they can explain what another player meant correctly. If somebody says, hang on, but that's ridiculous, and the third player says, no, what he meant was. And that clarifies it for everybody. That is a valuable player. And the other one is somebody who is so into the pattern of the world, and this more often happens when I'm using a published universe which somebody has read up on, but it can happen with my own stuff, is somebody who adds to my mythologizing, who adds to my storytelling in a sensible way, in a way that I hadn't thought of, but that fits what my mental image of what's going on is. And that is a player who is really engaged, really co-creating with you. So I think that's one of the things with a good player. I also say a good player will not assume that the GM is out to trap them, but will ask politely for clarification. And if he discovers that the GM is out to trap them on the basis of that, then he can kvetch, all right?
We've talked before about adversarial GMing and how it can scar a player's approach to a game. I am very much, I'm not here to screw over the players. I am a player, and I am here to have a good time, same as the rest of them are.
Yeah, but the GM does have a privileged position.
Yes, but my overall objective is that we all have a good time, not that I send the players home crying.
Yeah, but at some point, my privileged position says, no, it doesn't work that way. Or, no, that doesn't exist in this universe. No, you have imagined that wrong. But politeness, actually, let me put that in basic good rules for the players. Politeness and being a good companion, all right, towards the other players and towards the GM is something to be treasured. And
I suspect a lot of this comes down to basic social skills, which canonically role players had enough societal privilege not to have to develop.
Yeah, I think there may often have been neurological issues with many players. We tend towards obsession and geekiness, which are not entirely self-selected traits.
Here is a thing I've done wrong as a player.
Go on.
I have got a beautiful idea which rests on a whole bunch of assumptions, which are, you know, perhaps reasonable assumptions to make, but not necessarily actually valid. And then the GM says to me, well, yeah, but assumption one all the way back there doesn't actually work because this. And that really annoys me.
Yeah.
Obviously, I try not to take it out on anybody. But
yeah.
I'm still annoyed.
Yeah, well, this is the mishearing. This is the bit at which you discover that your whole relationship has been misunderstood from the very start. There was a player called Dave. in one of my early RuneQuest campaigns back in the last century, said he, and how weird it feels to say that, who lost his character by a horrid series of fumbles, which are liable to happen in RuneQuest games, and happened more generally back then, because the players' characters were less powerful and had less protection. And in some way he felt that we were mocking him, that we were using him as the butt. And he went away and he never came back again. And I wish I understood what thing at the start of our relationship he had misapprehended or I had misapprehended, that I could have prevented it and done it right. And I'm sorry, I
once lost a player because she felt that the entire group was piling on her character. I don't think they were. I don't think I was. But I'm not saying that that feeling wasn't valid on her part, because clearly it was. It was annoying her to the point where she didn't enjoy playing with that group. So fair enough. I still wish I could pin it down, but you know, it's a bit tricky to talk about.
The only occasion on which my players piled on one of the other players, I really felt he deserved it. But I feel slightly bad about that. But then he did end up as a Brexit Party candidate. So on the whole, that's bringing contemporary politics back in with a vengeance. I would say that I dread the moments when the players say, hang on, that's not what you said last time. And I dread even more the moments when they turn out to be right.
There have been occasions, I don't know, now remember the details, I've blotted them from my memory, at which a player spotted a logical flaw which invalidated the entire premise of the adventure, which I had not while writing it.
This is why you need editors, but we don't normally have those.
Cover up furiously.
Well, yeah, there are two ways for that to go. Either you apologise, or you come up with something brilliant at the last moment, which explains both observations, and this generally involves making the game much weirder than it was before.
Or at the very least, the villain thought.
Yeah, you thought that was him. But no, those are not the same person. This is moving off into GM self-pity territory.
Not that we spent a lot of time there or anything.
Oh, no. Good suggestions for players. Don't forget your character sheet.
Not a big thing for me, but I tend to keep the character sheets in some sort of reproducible form. So,
yeah.
If you don't have your character sheet, you get the last version you gave me as an update.
Well, that works, but I'm not that organised myself. I never have been.
Version control, my boy. Version control.
Oh, quite. I mean, I should have more pride in my universes, but I haven't even got a folder to keep the printouts of the current one in yet. And it's three sessions in, and a lot of background stuff has been printed out and shuffled into my bag. I'm really going to have to get it organised real soon now. I have moved away, parenthetically, from writing my notes in a big notebook, in a big A4 notebook, lined with lined paper, which is what I've done. I've got shelves full of old campaign logs over there, and I just keep everything on the computer and print out each week's events and plans and scribble notes on it, and then eventually some months later I will write it up as an account for ENA. But I don't know how this is going to affect my GMing style. It will, it should, but I haven't figured out how it's changing me yet.
Where I've tried a few iterations of this. If I'm trying to take typed notes, even very informal ones, during the session, I find that much more distracting than writing. That may well be a thing for me, because obviously we are both of an age where writing was a thing, taking lecture notes, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I was never very good at that either.
If I have a co-GM, then I can get on with it. And as a player, I find I can type up reasonably coherent prose in real time as the session is going along. It's not perfect, but it's reasonably good.
I can't. I really should experiment with using the using my iPen on my iPad. But I suspect that the medium will make my handwriting even more illegible than it is with paper and a biro. So it's an experiment to be done, but I don't think it's one that's going to succeed.
Are you still recording session logs?
I'm still recording session logs, and that is very useful to me. But as I say, normally only a few months later.
The thing I found weird about that is that it took me longer to write up an account from a session log, and it seems to be of lower quality than the notes I'd taken at the time, possibly because my notes taken at the time include elements of my mental state that don't get recorded. I don't know.
But they're different mediums for...
Anyway,
different...
player skills.
Player skills, all right. When you got to speak, speak up. When other people got to speak, shut up.
If you could make a decision in advance, do. This isn't as important as it used to be, but I certainly remember D&D games in which, you know, the initiative order has been established. Bob knows that his turn is coming next, but he doesn't start thinking about what he's going to do until somebody says, okay, it's your turn, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and there are players who I know and love who will say, ooh, ah, hang on a minute, ooh, at that point. What? Well, ooh, ah, where is my character sheet? Ooh. And what dice am I rolling? Ooh.
Of course, to some extent, this depends on how fluid the situation is. What I try to do is have a plan, but always be prepared to abandon it if something else has happened because somebody else has done something.
Yes, I think, it helps, especially if you're running to a combat, to strict initiative rules, that it helps to think about what you can do next the moment you finish doing what you did last. But on the other hand, listen to your intuition and listen to the voice of the character inside you and go with what seems to be the thing to do at the moment is often a good way to behave. I can't tell you which one is right for which different circumstances. You just have to listen for it.
Well, this meshes with one of my preferences as a GM, but I would much rather a player who is in character than a player who says, this will give me a +2, therefore I will do this, rather than that will give me a +1. I don't care if the thing you're doing makes you less effective. I don't need you to be at peak mechanical effectiveness. I want you to play the character. That's what I enjoy.
Yes, be consistent. Be consistent with the character. And on the other hand, it does help if you're. It does help. It helps me avoid killing your character if you know how to prepare and to get ready for the moment, and to take the rational precautions that a person would in those circumstances.
Well, part of this. This is another thing that's going to be the next effort, and all. Never mind. Running a character in combat in a system that is more than trivially complex is a skill. And
yes.
To some extent, it's a separate skill for each system. I mean, GURPS, obviously, but also RuneQuest, other systems too. And some players are not going to be good at it, and for some players, they're not going to enjoy getting good at it. They would rather do something else. These are still valuable players.
And the player's solution in that case is choose the right character that will give you fun. You do have to trust the GM to bring you to the place where your character can be useful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not against etiquette to remind the GM that you have this character who can do X and you haven't had a chance to do X the whole game. Do make polite requests. Please do not whinge, but make polite requests and say, I haven't had a chance to do this yet. And a good GM will say, yeah, all right, that's next.
I think it is something I may have said before, but all of the groups I now play with any frequency have majority players who have extensive GMing experience. And I think this makes them better players. I think it makes me a better player when it's my turn to do that. Because you know, we all know what it feels like to be the GM. We all know how much stress it can sometimes be. We all know how to make things easier.
Yes, I can understand that. I do have players who are never GMs. Some because they know they don't have the capacity, and some because they have tried to disastrous effect. But they will contribute. They will contribute as well. But yeah, if you have a sensitivity to what the GM is actually trying to do and what difficulty he's trying to overcome. So even if you've never been a GM, take a moment to step back and look at things from the GM's point of view. And don't forget that your GM is a human being as well. Most of them. Most of us are human beings. Yeah. So that is a rule for the players. A suggestion, a good practice. Look at it from the GM's point of view from time to time.
Also, I would genuinely say that there is this idea that GMing is always terribly hard and GMing is a thankless job, and if it were, I wouldn't be doing it. I'm not that selfless. I do it because I enjoy it. I do it because I find it a relatively easy thing to do compared with other things I might do for recreation.
So, well, yeah, you know, I must enjoy it because I keep doing it. But on the other hand, I get stage fright. I never got stage fright when I was an actor, because by the time I got on stage or into the studio, I was either confident I could do this and it was going to be good, or resigned to the fact it was going to be rubbish and I'd just have to barrel through. But I get I get preparation for a fright a day or two before a session, and if I've never run it before, and I start worrying, I start fretting, and I start. And I have a process for getting myself up to the ready stage, but it's not totally painless. And I don't know if other GMs feel like that, but it's a thing that I do because it's the thing that I enjoy doing at the instant, not that I enjoy doing at every step in preparation.
Though some of the back in the mini game days, goodness, I could lose myself for an afternoon working up a traveler subsector or a new and more terrifying ship or something.
There is joy to be had.
And now you can spit it out in half a second. You know, where's the fun in that?
Yeah, you know, what's worth something else can spit it out in half a second. That's a topic for maybe 10 or 20 years from now. Whether the AIs are getting good enough to replace us, it's not happening yet. No. Well, that said, if you have a list of rules for your players or a list of things that you want your GM to do, for that matter, we keep getting those, then you can send them to us via...
Leave a message on the website or email podcast@tekeli.ly.
And may 2026 be a year of delights and achievement and happiness generally for you and for the world. Well, there's no point in not being megalomaniac, is there?
They'll be happy, or else.
Or else we'll send Roger's beard at you. We'll see you in a month's time, we certainly very much hope.